Network. My name is Jill Brenneman. I want to welcome you to this show. Today's guest will be Gracie Fossette. She is of sexkitten.net. She discusses the choice to make sex work a career and the ethics involved. We will have her on shortly. She will be a wonderful guest. We are waiting for an audio server to bring her on. While we're waiting for my technology to catch up, I want to talk about briefly about the topic of hate speech. We often get called the pro-pimp lobby, and I have to say that is one really, really awful accusation to throw at the sex worker rights movement. That it calls the pro-pimp lobby essentially aligns us with many people who exploit the labor, the human rights of sex workers, and it's very far away from what we are, and clearly it's done just to create a distortion. It's done to create a distortion to demonize us as individuals. And, you know, what if I threw back at these people that make these accusations? You know, what if I threw back at her that she would say, you know, a bitch, or through some kind of language that was really derogatory? That kind of thing is not acceptable. Yet when you talk about our movement, it suddenly becomes acceptable, and I think it's something that really needs to be addressed, and it's something that's really hateful, and it's hard to even accept that this could be coming from activists such as Melissa Farley, who claims to be doing really good work for those in the sex industry, yet they can throw this kind of language out without really even caring about what they're doing. Once again, my name is Jill Brenneman. This is XBN, the Swap East Broadcast Network. We are guest today, Gracie Fossette, and I am very much looking forward to getting her on. We're waiting on a Blog Talk Radio audio server to give me access to the switchboard. And while we're waiting on access, Blog Talk Radio and XBN, many artists have generously given us authorization to use their music. We're going to play a brief track of a song called Goon Hand by The Naked Heroes while we restore the audio server.
Down, ready to shine.
And Gracie, my apologies. Blog Talk Radio would not give us an audio server.
Hate that when that happens.
Yeah, me too. It seems to happen quite a bit.
Well, it's just getting too popular.
That must be it. That must be it. I think it's time for Blog Talk Radio to invest in some more audio servers. I feel like I'm at the airport waiting for flights.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Well, welcome back to the show. My apologies for keeping you in a holding pattern. This is XBN, the Swap East Broadcast Network. My guest, Gracie Passett of SexKitten.net, she discusses the choice to make sex work a career and the ethics involved.
Well, I wanted to comment on the pro-pimp lobby stance, if I could, for a minute, because it is somewhat related.
Please do. I am more than interested to hear.
My experience, I never worked with any pimps or any women who did. I knew a few ladies that had worked for agencies run by men and found that some of the ethics or treatments could kind of run into that, near that sort of type of work where you're handing the money over to the men and that there's a lot more behavioral rules and really relationship issues involved. I think for people who are outside of sex work or have only heard of stereotypes of sex work, their visions are a woman who hand money over to men who are beaten, who are sexually used, and who believe they have a relationship of a romantic or dating nature involved with the economic one. And really, those sorts of relationships are that of those like a domestic violence relationship, women who are abused and still have issues of separating love and affection and need and protection from this male figure. my experience, again, had nothing to do with that, but it seems that the stories that I've heard second and third hand all line up with that. And on the 2020 report, the talk of the one woman who was with a pimp who talked about how it was a boyfriend who lured her in and how then she became one of his stable, but she still felt she had a relationship with him that was abused that way. I mean, it's really more akin to domestic violence than it is sex work. And for Melissa Farley or any other presumed expert to again, shove all sex workers under one umbrella of that is inaccurate as well as unfortunate.
You know, I love the point that you made relating the relationship with a pimp to domestic violence and the similar dynamics, you know, and it's a terrible accusation that's being thrown at us. You know, it's really done nothing more than to create a distortion. And you're right, in a lot of ways, you might as well call us the pro-batterer lobby.
Right. Well, and I know, Jill, for you personally, that you're a survivor of abuse. And that's another issue with sex work that becomes tangled in of whether or not it's a choice, whether a pimp brings you in or whether you have an abuse issue. I can't speak for you. I hope you will in a few minutes. But what I wanted to say is there are, of course, workers, sex workers who have histories of abuse in their backgrounds. So are airline stewardess, policemen, congress people. They're everywhere. It is not one abuse. It does not indicate your career path. And domestic violence doesn't indicate a career path for you. I guess it's these stereotypes that make it really difficult because women who have these problems in their past or in their present feel they cannot acknowledge them because then they fit the stereotype. If you survived abuse and you have chosen to become a sex worker, that somehow means that your choice was inferior based on your abuse. So you either deny it because then you're a stereotype, or you face it head on and you never get over that, you know, disqualifier of, well, you couldn't really know what you were doing because you're a poor abuse victim. So I guess I'd like to hear from you if you have any comments on that issue of how hard it's been for you personally to acknowledge both your sex worker's history and your abuse history.
Well, I think, you know, that's a really good question. And one of the things that I found in acknowledging it was that it tended to be something that many used in a political context to further that stereotype, you know, to use my experiences atomically and generically as a sweeping event. And it was discrediting really to everyone. It was discrediting to me as a survivor to, you know, throw a generalized stereotype and say that everyone involved in the sex industry, you know, can't make a choice, that they essentially all suffer the same violence, and it's discrediting to others who do not have the same experience, you know, who have different experiences. You know, I mean, we're all vastly unique people, and you know, you're right, to acknowledge that, yes, not only did abuse happen in my past, but abuse happened in sex work, the immediate correlation immediately comes together that, well, you know, that's why everything happened, and you know, it disenfranchises the thought process, and it got to the point where, you know, I no longer wanted to even talk about that aspect of it because I don't want to be identified with it.
That's discrediting you as a human being. That's part
exactly.
of your story.
Exactly.
And now you have to, I mean, as an abuse, a person who suffered abuse, there's silence and unspoken dirtiness associated with it, and forced silence, and now because of another work, another part of your life, you have to be silent on it again. It's another assault, I would imagine.
You know, you're absolutely right. It really is, because and to acknowledge it, essentially when I began to acknowledge it and went public with my past, it became the poster child experience that was used by a lot of people without my consent to advance political purposes, and it became the expectation that I would immediately always be expected to not only default to open up all those experiences over and over, but and also to have to relive them, you know, for the sake of political goals. And at some point I said enough, you know, that I was capable and wanted to do work and do activism that was constructive based upon my viewpoints and based upon what I felt was constructive social justice, and not just, you know, an attempt to throw an atomic view based upon my past onto everyone and have an atomic view thrust upon me based upon my past. So, you know, I think you bring up some really, really good points.
Well, for me, you know, I didn't want to dredge up uncomfortable things for you, but otherwise to show that when you become a sex worker and you are acknowledging that that's an industry you want to work in and or have worked in, any sort of victimization or pain you've suffered in the past is used to discredit your choices, your ability to make choices, and further places you in a victim role of either having to deny what happened to you and be silent about that, or to acknowledge it and to forever have that be the direct line. You were abused, therefore you were a sex worker, therefore all sex workers are abused, and it's bad and exploitative. And I think it's important that you have this show and that SWAP does the work that it does to point out that there are a bunch of stories and that abuse is horrific, whether, you know, whatever career you enter or end up in. My talk today, I wanted to talk about the choice to enter sex work. I don't have any of that personal histories, and I'm thankful for that. But it angers me when I have to defend that I must be blocking some abuse in my past. Otherwise, I never would have made the choices that I've made. Or to hear other women who I know personally from friendship-wise that they experienced things in their past, but that they don't feel that one was related to the other, that it's all part of the same human being and their life story, if you will, but that one experience doesn't necessarily lead to sex work or that to sex work being a nasty experience where they're exploited and further victimized. And I think that it's important to show that there's lots of pathways to this work, some of which are not safe, some of which are not as we would like them to be, and that's why there are groups standing up for rights, is because you're right, there are things that happen in this industry which, because it's illegal, makes it much more difficult to get help. But on the other side, there's lots of women and men who work in this industry who have none of that in their past and don't like being accused of having that life story when they don't, and that the workers that do have those life stories feel that they have to either deny them or forever be the poster child for the other side, so to speak, that they must be a victim of those circumstances and that removes them from having any ability of choice. And I find that really frustrating and sad, because we don't do that to public defenders or social workers.
No, you're right. You know, no one takes a poll of flight attendants or police officers and says, you know, well, you made this career choice based upon this, or you didn't make a career choice because this happened. You know, essentially, at least they're given the default of being asked the wrong feelings first. You know, why did you choose to become a flight attendant? You know, as a for instance, and that really seems to not be addressed when it comes to the sex industry. I have to be this ID. This is XBN, the Swappies Broadcast Network. If you'd like to join in our program, you can join us at 646-200-3136, 646-200-3136. That's the number to call in. My guest, Gracie Passett. My name is Jill Brenneman. And Gracie, going back to your point, you know, I think that one of the things that often gets missed is that as a movement that we recognize, you know, as you stated, we recognize as a movement that there is a lot of exploitation. There are a lot of people that are harmed at various levels, and that because of criminalization, because of social stigmatization, that they don't, they can't get access to what they need. Well,
if with any violence or abuse issue, the abuser has the power, and they leverage their power against the victim's inability to get out. And so in sex work, the number one leverage point is you've been doing an illegal activity. No one's going to help you. They're going to stick you in jail. They're going to remove your children. They're going to ruin your other career. You know, if you're doing this part-time and or going to school, you're going to be kicked out of school. You're going to lose your housing. These are big fears. So you feel you have no, you know, it's a blackmail, an abuse of power, and it limits people's choices. And I think that every sex worker would agree that whether or not that's been their experience, that's a horrible thing to have happen. And it doesn't happen, you know, to any people in other careers because they don't have, you know, they don't have that fear of being leveraged out of their entire life simply because they've done something that is deemed illegal, which I, you know, obviously my point of view is that it's consenting adults and exchanging in a business transaction that has nothing to do with the state. But, you know, these sorts of issues sometimes divide our industry, and I know that Radical Vixen has been doing a series on sex worker solidarity, and one of the things that we've been talking there is how can we come more together as an industry, because there are lots of little side avenues and separate issues that people, because of their experience, feel passionately about. Obviously, if you're someone who had an experience of exploitation with a pimp, you're going to want that issue removed. Other people are going to see that the avenue taken to remove that is only going to harm the greater pool of sex workers. But I think what we need to do is look at the things that we have in common, which, you know, we all want to go about our job safely. We all want to be able to report any crime that happens to us, whether it happens as a result of work or not, without the fear of our career coming in the way. We want that same sort of care when it comes to health care. We want to be able to have insurance and things like that, which are all denied to us now because we're not, you know, we're not truly employees. So these things all come into play that are great big work issues. My feeling is, though, that we're going to, you know, again, like I said last week, that we really need to work as a society on our issues of sex. Because if we can't accept sex, then we're not going to be able to understand the work. So I think we need to come together and understand the things we have in common. One of the things I see happening so often is I'll hear a lot of sex workers talking about the type of work they do, and they will, you know, but I'm not that kind of sex worker, you know, because maybe they don't actually touch clients or maybe because they didn't work with a pimp. They say it in that tone as if that somehow cleanses them of the sin being discussed. But what they've done then is sort of segregate classes in sex work, which is unfair. And, you know, the divided we fail stance, you know, they can round us up as individual groups as opposed to one large workforce. And I think one of the things that we have in common that we also need to work on is the issue of education and individual worker experience. I hear a lot of workers talking about, hey, it was a great way to make money while I was putting myself through school, so now I can be a musician, you know, film star, congressperson, lawyer, as if the means to the end, you know, the justifying part of it there, I only did it to become a congressperson. I find that sort of insulting. I chose it. I mean, I went into the work because of the money. That was my, you know, first consideration. I could make money. I think people do that with every career choice. And then it was, can I live with myself if I'm doing this? And I really found that my values aligned with the work. So I find it insulting when I hear people say, I only did it to pay off my bills. I only did it through school. Because it's sort of saying that there's this line at which it's acceptable to do it, and then it's not. So I think we all need to, as sex workers, stop making these exclusionary cases of they're not that kind of sex worker, or they only did it because. I think we need to stand up and be proud of it and say, yeah, I was a sex worker. It's money and it's a career.
You know, I so agree with you. It's so important that we find the commonalities, that we find we only develop strength together. You know, and part of that is accepting diversity of experience without passing judgment and without having judgment passed. And until that happens, you know, it really feeds into the power structure that oppresses.
Because once they can find one angle, you know, what if they find, you know, the weaker lamb to bring down, then it's just pick off one by one, you know. But if we all stand together and say that, you know, sex work is a valid choice, we chose it, our sisters chose it, and that's all that needs to be said. Not making these status lines of when it's acceptable or who's better or who's not as bad. And when it comes to those who didn't choose the work, you know, they are victims of other situations. We talked last time about whether it's drug abuse or being abused. Their ability to choose has been taken away. They don't have the ability to choose. And so that's a separate issue, and we need to make sure that because they're in our industry, that they're not forgotten. And one of the best way we can take care of them is pushing for rights, because then if the work is respected, then they will have more avenues of escape. But right now, if you've got a drug addiction and you're a sex worker going in and getting assistance for that, you know, there's the fear that you're going to be handed over to authorities, or you're going to end up, you know, you're going to be viewed as a lesser than human being, and you're not going to get the right care.
Well, and even just, you know, I you bring up a very good point. You know, that there are people with abuse in their histories and that have ended up in the sex industry and. In all honesty, probably do not belong there. And because of criminalization, because of social stigmatization, getting out, you know, the options to get out, you know, the common default I think that people go to is, well, you know, you should just quit. You should just get out. Well, that's a lot easier said than done. I mean, you can't put sex work down on a resume.
Well, and when it comes to a person exploiting you and abusing you, they have the power there, just like any domestic relationship with a marriage or a partner. One of the first things they do is whittle away your other support systems. They alienate you from family and friends. Same thing is done in sex worker by pimps, is your world becomes his world and what he wants you to do. And you don't the only other people you have to talk to are people equally dependent upon him. So that removes your choices and your avenues of escape. And if you can't go to you're afraid to go get help legally for, you know, being physically beaten because you're afraid you're going to end up in jail for it or lose your children, then that's not an option for you. You don't have that option. And then the same thing, if you go get medical care, if you're afraid to divulge your situation for fear of retaliation or for fear of not being understood and accepted there, then you're not going to divulge it there. That's how batterers at large continue to be assisted, is because they remove support systems. So that's another reason why sex workers need to come together, because you know, we have to provide support networks for people at all levels of the industry.
You know, you've brought up so many good points. I almost don't even know where to start. You know, it's such a classic. You know, it's such a classic dynamic. You know, whether it be, you know, the wife beater who, you're right, destroys the support system. Whether it be the pimp that destroys the support system and
you.
You lose that support system. You lose that ability to have input from people outside of that support system, and the world becomes centered around the abuser. And you know, I know I can speak from personal experience that the criminalization certainly kept me trapped. You know, I mean, I was terrified of the police.
And that was probably, that fear of yours was encouraged and fed daily.
It was constantly fed. There was no doubt that you know, the pimp knew exactly what he was doing, and that, you know, that in itself reinforced his power. It all it did was remove agency for escape, you know. You know, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I watched this documentary last night on Patty Hearst, and you know, the dynamic was very similar to that. You know, which I realized, you know, people may question, well, how's the dynamic similar? But you know, she was brought into an abusive situation, and then she was given, you know, a choice of robbing this bank or being killed. So she robbed the bank, and then she's a criminal. And then people are like, you know, you had 100 opportunities to escape, and you didn't.
Well, what is that called when you, there's that name for that, when people are, when they form relationships with their captors, I forget what they call that. They form relationships.
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, Stockholm Syndrome. That need, human need to survive, when you're an individual and you have no other support and it's just you and your master, it's, you know, what you're left with is just, it's going to get me through today with the least amount of pain. And if that means going out and forcing a trick or shooting drugs into your arm, that's what you do. And, you know, we need to get support to these people. So if there are agencies and support groups out there that are willing to work with sex worker industry, then sex workers together with themselves and hope to, you know, hold out hands and be supportive, that's the best way to do that. Decriminalization will be a large step in that, because it will offer, you know, an institutional way out. You can approach the law, the medical community, and get assistance. It would remove that fear, that one leverage point from your captor of saying, you know, if you go forward, now you're the bad guy. And that's classic in abuse. If we can get, you know, if we can really get that stigma taken away socially as well, so that medical people are going to hear these stories and not react with a grimace or how could you, but go, okay, well, regardless of that, you need these help and this treatment and this support. That would be the way to go after it. But again, these are all people that couldn't clearly make decisions because they're caught up in surviving and the least pain. And they're not able to fully make decisions. They're not able to consent. I mean, we in this business, we talk a lot about safe, sane, and consensual for BDSM work. But really, any sex work should have those things carried with it. You know, you have to be safe in not just using a condom, but in how you conduct yourself and having support. You need to be sane in the fact that you need to be able to make a conscious ability, you know, have the ability to reason and choose. And you need to be able to consent, you know, without all the information, without support, without knowing the facts, without having assistance. You can't really consent to something. Otherwise, you're turning yourself over in a relationship where you don't have any power. And that's not choosing. you know, that's different. And these issues are completely removed from my own, but, you know, under the current societal and political stance for sex worker, you know, I've investigated them, and they're not so much an issue of sex work, because these people that are abused or are drug abusers or have addiction issues, these people are in every career and every facet, you know, across the country, across the world. And they can't make good decisions because they're not in places to be able to do that. But they are, unfortunately, the largest, you know, poster children for the industry. All sex workers are, you know, addicted or abused, and it's not true. I think we have one of the areas where we could actually probably, when we come together, can probably make the most inroads into making changes for these issues for people across the world. We have the toughest road to walk on it, but I think that once we get there, we can actually get these issues dealt with in other areas, other industries. But we've got, you know, the furthest to go to be legitimate first. But once we do that, I think then we're going to be able to, you know, sound very utopian, don't I? But I think we're going to be able to do that.
You know, I think, I don't know if you're utopian. You know, I see you as a reformist, and I think reform can happen. You know, and there's this whole construct that's created that, you know, if you're a sex worker, you live in this world of drugs and violence, and oftentimes, in many cases, you do. And there's this, you know, and in many cases, you know, many don't. But there's this construct that once you enter the straight world, or if you can get to the straight world, that all of those go away. You know, that everyone in the straight world no longer, you don't have any type of, you know, drug use or any type of violence, and you know, all of these constructs still exist, but when it comes to sex work, you know, immediately they become the norm, they become the default, you know, and all the stigmatization that goes with that. I mean, one of the things that the Swap East has advocated for, and we've had very little success with, is trying to get rape crisis centers to work with sex workers, you know, or to get domestic violence shelters or homeless shelters to take in sex workers. And they simply balk at that they will not take in criminals, and, you know, especially to me in the case of DV shelters and in the case of crisis shelters, I mean, these are agencies that should know.
Yeah, because rape isn't part of sex work. You know, rape, you know, every rape shelter worker should know rape has nothing to do with sex. Rape is violence.
Rape is violence, that's exactly right.
And sex work isn't violence. Sex work has to do about sex and companionship and relationships, which, you know, again, we've come a long way supposedly recognizing that husbands cannot rape wives. So clients or anyone else doesn't have the right to rape a sex worker. It's, you know, no means no, and it's a different, the rapist is a violent person, not a person with a sexual urge. And you would expect people in shelters to realize that distinction.
If you'd like to join in XBN, the Swap East Broadcast Network, 646-231-36 is my guest, Gracie Fassett. My name is Jill Brenneman. This is XBN. Once again, that number, we'd love to have you join in, 646-231-36. You know, I mean, one of the things, I did an interview and with a media outlet, and the reporter actually won an award based upon the interview. And when she explained to me what she won it on, it was almost jaw-dropping that she won it because she got a soundbite from me that said that sex workers can be raped.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, this was in relation to the first International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers, which commemorates, you know, the sentencing of Gary Ridgway, who killed 41, at least 41, runaway teens and prostitutes, and gleefully did it, saying he did it because he knew he could. And
well, that goes back to, I mean, like Jack the Ripper and all that. Back prostitutes on the streets are going to be prone to more violence. It's unfortunate, but it's usually a sign of poverty. I mean, any sex worker, given the choice between doing an out call for $1,000 an hour versus standing on a street corner and hoping to get $10 for, you know, a BJ in a car, is, you know, what are they going to choose? They're going to choose option A. People that are down there doing that work are doing that because they don't feel they have any other choice. A lot of them, I shouldn't say all, but most of them, you know, you're going to choose to be inside where it's warm and comfortable. You're going to choose where you're going to have more protection. You're going to choose where you make more money if you have the option to do so. People that are desperate and clinging to the, you know, for any bit of money they can bring home to keep a home or to try and get a home are acting out of desperation, and that's far less of the ability to choose. You know, it's like the person with the MBA in their hand still has to choose if they're going to work at Best Buy till the other job comes along. They're not happy with that job. They're going to take it to make ends meet until. It's far less of a sacrifice and a personal safety issue than a person working on the streets. But, you know, there are these economic lines of accessibility and choice, and a lot of them are along with the lines of education and health insurance in this country. I know a number of workers that chose to go into the work because they couldn't get, you know, any decent health care coverage at their other job. So they started working sex work to be able to afford that health insurance payment and make ends meet. Sooner or later, a lot of them ended up just switching over to sex work because it made more money all the way around. But those who don't have a full-time job or don't have anything or get laid off and find everything whisked away in a matter of 3 months, they really don't have a choice. And these do exist in our industry, but they didn't fall out of sex work, and they didn't, you know, they fell out of a lot of other industries. They're not just sex workers' issues and just a sex worker problem. Poverty runs across this nation and across the world.
And poverty is such a driver, you know. And again, I think that's another issue.
Sex work is one of the cheapest, you know, home-based businesses to start. You know, you have a cell phone or a pager, and especially if you're working for an agency that's going to do the promotion for you and do the screening for you so you can be safe and in the beginning till you learn things, you know, you really don't need a whole lot. And that's the fundamental belief, is that there's no skills needed. And in truth, there's a skill set needed, and there's training that is helpful, and there's also the fact that you really need to have your head screwed on right to make the choice. Because this, I think a lot of your interviewees in the past 2 weeks that I listened to have mentioned that the work isn't just about body parts. So you have to be a good listener. You have to be educated. You may need to appear in public places and carry on conversations with people in other industries. You have to be able to be a little bit of a counselor. You have to be a little bit of a, you know, support person. There's a lot more here than just sex. So what ends up happening a lot is people enter in what Diane Sawyer would call the romanticized version, thinking, I've got a cell phone, I've got a body, I'm going to make $1 million. They forget that there's a lot of other attributes that are needed in this business. And they end up usually not making a lot of money and, you know, staying in the, you know, what we'd call an entry level tier there, maybe not being as successful, maybe not being as happy. But a lot of people, you know, do think that there's a dream element to this work without having any knowledge of it. And again, without knowledge of the industry you're entering, it's not a good choice to enter it, whatever that field is. I mean, my niece wants to be a vet. You know, she wanted to be a vet, always used to play with her stuffed animals until she realized she would have to cut one open to be a vet. And then suddenly she didn't want to be a vet anymore because that, she couldn't bear the idea of seeing the insides of animals, even if it was to help them. She just can't do that. So she's, you know, considering different options now. And that's the thing with sex work, is it's not just about body parts. There's a lot more to the work, and there's a lot more to being safe in the work, just like there is in going out on dates, you know. You have to be smart on how you're going to go out on that first date. And these are things that need to be learned and investigated before you enter. And because it's illegal, a lot of people don't talk about the work. I know that Ms. Brooks has a lovely book on the Internet Guide to Escorting, and she offers a lot of same tips in there, too. People should really read and investigate what they can before they make the decision. But when you're desperate...
And because of the illegality, you know, as you had stated, it's so hard to find that very information. You know, finally things are changing to some degree because of media changes, you know, that we can create our own media, we can self-publish our own books, you know, we can blog, we can finally build community, and, you know, you're seeing the emergence of a movement that I don't know could have emerged without that media, and, you know, and if it could, it certainly would have been a much slower process. And
well, I agree that it's media and the internet, especially, and the technology, you know, like this radio show wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But one thing we have to always keep in our minds is that there's a lot of sex workers and a lot of other people in general that aren't on the internet, can't afford internet, can't afford a computer, can't be participating in or hearing in this media. And these are the people that are more likely to be in those desperate situations, making uninformed decisions, having less support. So I think it is important that we remember that those of us that are on the internet have better income situations and probably better education backgrounds. And so we can't base all sex work off of the stereotype of what we're hearing here either. I mean, I don't want to do a disservice to the people who are disenfranchised from being able to participate in the internet, because they're, you know, their voices need to be heard, too. I think, you know, the people that you're working with that are on street level, oh, certainly a lot of them don't have, this opportunity to be listening to this or to be blogging or downloading someone else's podcast or making a podcast. So I do think we need to remember that there are a lot of us that are disenfranchised because of the technology.
You know, that's such a good point, and it gives such a powerful reason for why to have a movement and why to build solidarity and why resources that we're trying to create can be created. You know, the people who are most disenfranchised, you're absolutely right, they often don't have access to these very basic things, and they still deserve and have every right to the same rights as any human being, and you know, those are taken away even more by poverty, taken away by circumstance, taken away by so many things, and that,
you know, a pimp is going to let you have your internet connection in your room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're going to be kept away from the support group and that sort of thing. And that's why we also need to work with mainstream media, not because they're necessarily any more connected to impoverished and desperate people and circumstances, but because they do reach a wider audience of people who can affect change. Because when it comes down to voting, should something become decriminalized, we're going to need a lot more votes than just, you know, the people on the internet. And we're going to need a lot more votes than just the people who are listening to this radio show or listening to a podcast off Red Light District Chicago. We're going to need people, you know, reading it in the New York Times and in the, you know, Milwaukee Journal and the Chicago Tribune and, you know, all those other newspapers. We're going to need that awareness to be out there. So this, you know, this is the starting and this is good, and I have nothing against it at all, but I think we need to keep a mind on the fact that we need to be aware that not all of us are represented on the internet, and that we do have issues, and that while a lot of those stories can't be told directly, we need to incorporate them in with our stories, and we need to get all of these stories to the mainstream media in a way that makes other people want to affect change.
And that you know, that to me is such a critical part of it, that finding the mechanics to get mainstream public to accept that this is an issue that they need to take on, that, you know, as long as any class of people is considered the bad class, as long as, you know, any woman is considered the lower class, the whore class, deserving to be raped, you know, then nobody is truly free.
No, and go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, the issues of sex work are so tangled up in the huge issues of, you know, what I perceive to be society's problems, you know, education, poverty, feminism. These things run rampant in our industry, and we sort of get blamed for them when what we're doing is maybe magnifying them. I think instead of being blamed for being the host of the problems, that we should maybe be looked at as how they play out in our industry, and looked at them that way, as, you know, in this framework, maybe look at poverty a little differently, maybe see domestic violence a little differently. You know, if we can't get people in rape crisis centers to understand that a prostitute can be raped and that it should be just as criminal, then, you know, certainly, you know, as a society, we aren't accepting that rape is an act of violence and not sex. So, you know, instead of blaming us for a worker going into an quote-unquote unsafe industry, maybe we should be looking at our cultural values instead and saying, wait a minute, no means no, rape is violence, not sex. So her status as a sex worker is irrelevant in this case. There was violence perpetrated.
That's exactly right, you know, and I think what often gets missed, you know, in any rape victim is, you know, the focus immediately always becomes on, well, you know, what did she do? You know, and where is the focus on responsibility for the fact that rape is an act of violence, and violence is a choice of the perpetrator? It's never a choice of the victim. You know, that the person to be blamed is the person perpetrating the crime of violence. And that, you know, I am going to do another speaking presentation at William and Mary again to try to counter this same argument from a self-described Christian feminist who feels that sex workers cause women to be raped because sex workers devalue women and it teaches young men to rape. And regardless of whether this man is well-intentioned or not, I think he's misguided, because he needs to be teaching the young men not to rape, that they don't own that right to rape, and that
if you want sex, and you don't have a partner, there's an option to go procure that at a rate in a safe manner. That's what a sane, nonviolent person does. A violent person goes and takes it from whatever person he can successfully grab. Those are two different scenarios.
That's exactly right. You know, I find it astonishing that the point is well, first, the point isn't being made, but second, this man feels so strongly that you know, now he wants the face-to-face debate, because he wants to, you know, put me in my place and demonstrate that, you know, in fact, by advocating sex worker rights, we are commodifying women and forcing young men to become rapists. And that's just a crock of well, this is a family show, so Blog Talk Radio yells when we use bad words, you know, that's a crock of excrement.
Yeah. It does great disservice. I think one of the huge problems in our country is that we equate sex with love, and they're not the same thing. And we do a disservice to this, not just with sex workers, but with our own children. This is why it's so confusing. Is you know, I think every sex worker and every person would agree that sex with love is the best. But sex without love is still quite satisfactory, and for what it is. And there are issues of loneliness in this country, and there are people with disabilities in this country that wouldn't have sex any other way. There's a need for sex, and to make these distinctions about what sex is and what it's not. And I think that's why Diane Sawyer was cringing when talking about how women devalue themselves by being sex workers, as if we're giving some part of ourselves away unintentionally or without choice, simply by having some sort of insertion done. And that's not necessarily the truth. Men do not, take anything that way that isn't given, unless it's rape. And even if a sex act is consummated and agreed by two people, love may have nothing to do with it. And we need to accept those realities for what they are, and understand what sex is, so we can understand what the sex work is. And, you know, most clients understand the distinction. Most clients do not believe that when they're paying someone $300 an hour, that they're being loved in that moment. They may feel accepted, understood. They may feel grateful. They may feel, you know, arousal and release. But that isn't, you know, this unconditional love of a partner. It's different. And if we can make these distinctions here, then we should be able to make the distinctions on the other side, that sex and, you know, between sex and rape, and whether or not I consent to give sex to you one time with or without monetary attachment does not mean that you have carte blanche to take whatever you want.
I so wish we had, and forgive me for interrupting, I so wish we had more time. We are down to 20 seconds. I would so love to invite you to come back and do another segment with us in the future.
You know I will.
My guest has been Gracie Passett. My name is Jill Brenneman. We so appreciate you joining our show, and we appreciate our musical sponsors. This is XXBN, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Swap East Media Group.
Blog Talk Radio.